Good day to all of you listening to this recording. My name is Rob Christie. I have the privilege this morning of talking with my good friend Jim Hamilton. Jim has some exciting new ideas that he circumscribes under the title of Coherence and Flow, which I'd like very much for him to share with us this morning. Jim, take it away.
Well, good morning, Rob, and good morning, everyone out there and in there and around there and up there and down there and behind there and all of us. You know, we were just talking just before we started the recording about coherence, actually coherence and flow and sovereignty. And I have a lot of background and a lot of big backdrop in sovereignty, personal power. I'm not really traditionally associated with sovereignty and some of the political aspects. On the other hand, I am a 508 church. I am a reverend, and learning how to understand the law is a big chunk of what we're doing. But what we're talking about here in sovereignty, the truest sovereignty is about becoming intact in your connection with Source. And as you become intact in your connection with Source, when you become partnered with Source, blended with Source, you step into your truest nature, your truest possibilities, your truest potential. And ultimately, that's what sovereignty is that ultimate. Could you say your ultimate dependence on yourself, except it's not yourself, because your ultimate dependence on your inner nature, which is that governance and order that everything shares. And when you blend into that, then you step into your power, then you step into the truest sovereignty. Just
well,
for
let me,
beginning.
Let me stop you, Jim, just for a moment, if I may. So when you're talking about sovereignty, you're not talking about it this morning in a political sense, although you are involved in it in that sense in another way. And number two, tell the audience what you mean when you use the word source so they understand.
Well, I believe there's an order that everything shares. In fact, from a very young age, I always identified, to me early on, recognizing that the planets revolve around the sun, there's an order to that. Now, you can call it magnetism, you can call it gravity, you can call it a number of things, but those, you know, electricity and magnetism and gravity and these kinds of principles, underneath them is a commonality. You can't say gravity and magnetism are just out there and they float around and bang into each other. They all belong under a single auspice, assuming the word auspice works. And so loosely in the world, that's referred to as God. Now, the shortcoming of the term God in some respects is, like when I was younger, you know, God was kind of perceived as some guy in a beard and a rock, you know, two-legged, and with a beard and a rocking chair and, you know, sin and all this kind of stuff. And of course, that's really a child's version. But a lot of people still have. Anyway, the point is there's a single order that everything shares. And so I use the term source, innate intelligence, the divine. I use the term frequency of God. I use the term God. I use the term coherence, because coherence dissipates distortion. The frequency of God dissipates distortion. There's actually a single order. Now, you can be in resistance to that. And that's what the human species seems to be all about, because humans are out of sync with their bigger connection. They're out of sync with their potential. And we're actually rather destructive on the planet. So source is our the center of our very being, and we're part of that.
Let's go back to sovereignty and flow. because I interrupted your flow, if you will, in order to get clarity on what you meant by source. And
Sure.
you did that very well. So let's go back to those subjects.
Well, to repeat what I said, you might say, to become sovereign, first off, we're never on our own. I don't care what you think you know or what you think you believe, you are not on your own. And if nothing else, being on our own, if you will, we are constantly using tools. We are constantly using, if nothing else, we create shortcuts. We a jig is a tool that you use in carpentry and maybe other arenas where the jig allows you to, like in carpentry, to cut something to the same length each and every time, or to do a certain kind of a curve in a piece of wood, and the jig is like a pattern. And so humans use tools all the time. And the ultimate tool is a re-enabling of our natural state of connection with source, because somehow we're out of sync with that. And being out of sync with that, we're less than our optimum selves. So sovereignty, believe it or not, is about being ultimately individual. It's about using the highest quality tools so we can express ourselves at our very highest nature. And I don't think that we will ever be separate from this order that everything shares. And I'm a big believer in sovereignty. I'm a big believer in ascension. And in fact, it's in ascension. Let's see, how would I tie those together? Clearly, so what I believe is most people, well, ascension is available on this planet, and it's in your connection with source, for which you have no resistance, no division between you and source, where you become blended with source to the point that you've totally moved out of the concept of polarity, the linear, and ascension, which means you jump to another level, where you end up with a true identity, and that is a product of partnership with source at a very high level. And I believe there are dimensions far beyond this earthly realm, because this is a realm of polarity and duality that we can jump to. And actually, I believe the planet and its polarities allow us to jump to another level. But when we do that in this ascension process, for which we then have an identity, we're still blended with source. And that's the power, that's what empowers us, our connection with source, for which then ascension becomes evident and available. And then you head off on a very different journey, even more interesting than what we've got here.
I practiced Kashmiri Shaivite yoga very intensely for 8 years. And I can remember my guru talking about full God realization. That's the way she put it. And it sounds very much to me, listening to you this morning, Jim, that you're talking about the same thing she was.
And then you describe what does full God realization mean, or what's the interpretation of that? And first off, it's no mind at all. So full God realization isn't something you sit there and you go, oh, I got it. And maybe you strut around a little. Now I'm being facetious, but it's when you move. So my world, mind, time, and resistance are synonymous. And when you move out of mind, you move out of time and you move out of resistance. And when you move out of resistance and mind and time, the whole thing opens up. And God realization is found there, but it's not found by the mind. So while you can use the term God realization, it's not a realized thing from a mind perspective. So it's a little bit confusing, but particularly, let's say you spend a period of time in there. You can reflect on it from the reference of the mind, but it's actually a very poor tool, and you can't use the mind to get back to it. So, mind, time, and resistance, as they fade away, God realization becomes evident, but it's not delivered by the mind And it can't be really cataloged or documented by the mind either. It's a place of no space, no time, for which actually most people think you just bliss out. But the fact of the matter is there is a whole nother octave of journeying and adventure. And I don't know about contrast. Couldn't be sure about that. But there's a whole gradient of existence. And in my world, the boundary of that is where full-time fun starts. So I spend most of my days in and my existence in fun. As a younger person, I've always been a little serious because I've always thought about bigger things, I've been involved in kind of sorting this out. But now everything is fun, and that's the bottom of self-realization, fun, full-time fun. And fun is actually where everything unfolds on its own at this in this gradient of joy and peace and expression. And at the same time, I want to say expressionless, because you're not driving the show. And in fact, most of the time, you best identify it when you look back and see the points that it allowed it to occur. So you can't be in this state and be in your mind and go, look at me, look how I'm doing. It doesn't really work that way. You got to step away for it to fly, for it to work.
Well, listening to you, Jim, I guess we're both practical Taurus guys. There's a road to follow to get there. And when I think back on my days seriously engaging in Kashmiri Shaivite yoga, we were taught certain practices. And the implication was we weren't the first. My guru was simply passing on to me what had been passed on to her. And to put the matter simply, if you follow these practices diligently over a period of time, you will make progress toward what she characterized as full God realization, which I think is very similar to what you're talking about. And it definitely was not something you figured out with your mind. And I will never forget, as long as I live, the day I met Jim Hamilton, because you shared something with me that just knocked my socks off, which was, I've been meditating for decades, Rob, and I've come up with some technologies, a track to run on, which will get you there quicker. Never forget that. One was the guidance light process, and the other was the process that you'd invented that was an offshoot of the technical stuff that you do.
Neurofeedback.
Neurofeedback. So do you want to divert at this time into either of those, or would you rather
So
take a different direction with the conversation?
I think we should go into those, but let me say first that I assume that the work you were doing, I don't, you referred to her as a guru, right? That was her kind of her title. She was a
Oh,
guru.
yes. Yeah.
Okay. I believe my point
And
is
part of a lineage.
right in a lineage. Right?
Her guru had passed the mantle to her, as
You know
someone
what?
else had passed the mantle to him.
I think what they're really teaching people is how to become mindless. Because the journey to God, if you will, is a mindless journey. And it's the ability to put this mind aside, that the whole thing opens up.
But you're definitely right, Jim. There was never anything about go figure this out. It was go meditate, go do these, I forget the name of the exercises offhand, what they were called. They weren't called exercises. They were bodily positions, or go stare reverently at a picture of my guru. Whatever. None of it was mind-based.
So what comes to mind, I'm working with a group right now, and I'm kind of watching this whole thing, and one of the things there's a regard for is Joe Dispenza. And the point I'm getting at is I've never done any of his meditations. I know people that have gone to his events that they would call them exhausting, and they go home and take a week to kind of reorient and kind of get back to life. And I think what he does is a massive mind alteration. I understand that he does a meditation, and in fact, I've heard it, where he uses a very odd voice. Almost like a, well, I can't really say because I've really not done it to any great degree, even though I will be sitting in on one of his meditations soon for a particular reason. But I think what he's doing is throwing people out of their mind, throwing people off, throwing them out of their mind. And the gyrations of the meditation, the affirmations of the meditation are matched up to throw you out of your mind and at the same time feed you a certain type of affirmation. I believe that's what he's doing. And I can't say that for sure, and I probably have no right to speak about it because I haven't. Well, I did buy one of his seminars that was pretty new, and so I guess I have been through some of his material. But so the point becomes, I believe, that there's different kinds of exercises you can do to put you out of your mind. And when you move out of your mind, you become God realized, because it's actually as simple as that. Now, when you meditate for a few moments, and it says 20 minutes or let's say an hour, you move out of your mind. And at the very simplest, that's called pleasure. When you meditate and become empty, and you disappear, and when you come back, and it's not like you went anywhere, because that's not what we're doing. But when you meditate and have learned how to become empty when you meditate, that is pleasurable. And if I remember, I said the bottom rung of the high end of consciousness is fun. So how different fun is from meditating and pleasure, I'm not sure. But there, it's so the fun part of meditation, or listen to that. But anyway, the fun part of meditation is it's enjoyable because we move out of our mind. So what I want to touch on, there's something called dynamic meditation. It was introduced to the world by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. I don't know when. I remember doing it in around 1980. In small groups of us, I was part of something called the Today Church. Bud Mosier and Carmen Mosier. And they ended up taking over a Methodist church in renting the property, or maybe part of the property. I don't know how that worked. And we had a basement area where we would go down and do dynamic meditation, and we would be in the dark, and there'd be, let's say, 15 of us, and it would be in the dark, and there'd be a sound system, and it would be a bunch of drumming. And kind of some, there would be four or five components. And one of the components I remember is you settled into listening. So we'd be standing, and then we'd be doing what were called who breaths. And we would kind of jump up and down, and we just go, who. And we do it in our own order. And then we'd jump to something else because the command in the sound system and the person that was delivering this dynamic meditation had instructions, and we'd go through about four or five phases, and all of a sudden there'd be a stop. I mean, a command to stop. And what would happen is we would suddenly stop what we're doing. We might have sweat running down our face a little bit, and we would be mindless for very short periods because the idea of dynamic meditation was to throw the mind off. And God was right there. How long did it last? 3 or 4 minutes, maybe? And we're talking about the same thing. So, of course, what my work ultimately is about you talked about guidance light, the hair stands up on my arms. Core resonance is a fancier version of the same thing, more of a full-blown. Because when you move out of the mind, so 3 or 4 minutes, not too much happens except for there's a realization. You realize something's quite different. But when you learn how to do it for extended periods, you realize that you're naturally met with guidance. And I've identified two kinds of guidance. And maybe we can go into that next.
A point that I think is important that I don't want to lose, and it's not something you and I have talked about before, but you were talking about Joe Dispenza, who a lot of people think the world of. After one of his, after going to one of his events, I don't know whether he does them online now or in person, it doesn't really matter. The people go home and like I think you said take a week to recover or words to that effect. And what came up for me listening to that was if you jump into the pool of getting closer to God, getting closer to guidance. I don't want to say it's a risk because it's just part of the process, but the word risk comes up, and that is in the process, you may encounter resistance. And that resistance may be massive. I've had that experience in my life recently, around money, of all things. As I attempt to let go of selling my time by the hour and moving into being the author of a book and maybe a coach, I'm encountering massive resistance. And it feels like the same thing that I suspect Joe Dispenza's clients are encountering. And I think one of the merry, ver one of the many merits of the guidance light process is that it moves you in the direction of coherence without engaging massive resistance. And that's an incredible blessing that, I think is maybe only understood by you and me.
Well, a couple of things. One, I claim to have spent lots of time in presence. And I think once you understand what the end result looks like, you have a better sense of designing tools, or tools become evident that become useful. So that's one quick remark. Another is I believe that, and I'm not picking on Joe Dispenza, and I even like that he charges lots of money because he gets a higher quality crowd. I believe he's teaching pretty elementary stuff, basically, myself. But I believe that in his, the reason people can be exhausted at these things and having to kind of recover and settle back into their world is because it's forced. So
There you
you talk
go.
about resistance, but it's forced. It's forced open by crowd environments and stuff like that. I'm not making that wrong because people do it and they like it and they do what they want. But it's forced. And I remember one of the first times I was in presence. I was living in LA, and I offhand that would have been maybe 2011. I don't know if it was an earlier time. And I remember I was in presence for about 3 weeks, and it was a rip. It was, when I say work, I don't know how else to explain it. I remember being on the freeway and realizing I was in a state of flow at 80 miles an hour with everybody else. And it was like one of the first times it happened. And it was a bit taxing on the system. And it wasn't that I was driving it, but it happened. And I realized somehow that I could hold it open. And it was kind of exhausting. And now the third remark is you're bumping over to a new a mechanism for being on the planet and earning money and this and that. And what you're up against is your existing patterns and habits. So all of this is related. So your patterns and habits are set. Your entire life is set by your patterns and habits. Your patterns and habits are what produces your momentum. And so it's the revising of your patterns and habits that revise your momentum, which revise your outcomes. So, in the Joe Dispenza event, and I wish, I've not been to one live. I have clients who've done these things and they've stopped going to them. There's a wear and tear and a reorientation. And I wonder how many people that become healed in these events stay healed when they move back, when they go back home, and their mind goes back to wondering what happened. I'm not picking on the deal because the extravaganza that he offers is really valuable because this is what we're doing. We're out there learning how to express and expand and extend, and we play with all these different means of doing it. So, and we all do things that are a match for us. So, and we grow and then we try other things and on and on. And I say kudos to Joe Dispenza because he has big crowds. He charges a lot. He gets a certain quality of people, and those certain quality of people pay a lot of money. So that means they're paying attention. And means he has their attention. So he's delivering what he wants to deliver to them. And a lot of people are very pleased. So there we are. It's good.